Welcome back to another episode of the Wonner Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and my lifelong best friend.
Kramer England.
I'm wearing a girl's just-want-to-have-fun hat. I feel like Linda would like this hat.
She probably would. Or if you had a parrot hat, she'd probably like that.
Yeah. Do you think Linda's a parrot head? Do you think she's a Jimmy Buffett fan? It's not a parrot, right? It's like a parakeet or a
bird. What is that bird? Yeah,
I don't know,
whatever it is. Yeah, she's, who knows, she seems like she would like that.
Yeah, we are talking about Sam Raimi's new film Send Help. Sam Raimi's teaming up again with Rachel McAdams. They worked on Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness together. Yeah. She didn't have a huge role in that movie.
No, he really liked working with her, though, he said, and this was why he wanted to cast her. So, and it worked out. They seemed to like working with each other.
It's Dylan O'Brien, right? If you've watched our one or first thoughts, that's where we do our kind of spoiler-free first takes out of the theater. And I have the unpopular opinion on this movie. Yet again, this keeps happening lately where it's like, boy, I'm not agreeing with the critics or the audience. Yeah. It happened with both of us for Avatar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's happening with this one for me. But I will say that, like, for me, the things that are working here is I think Dylan O'Brien and specifically Rachel McAdams are both doing commendable work. And I think Rachel McAdams is really like making the most of this character and the fact that it offers her the opportunity to show us layers and levels and colors to her acting pedigree that we have not seen yet. Yeah. But tell me what you liked about Send Help.
Okay, what I liked about it, and I said this in my first thoughts, is that it was scary. What I always forget how I phrased it, but it was scary, funny, and dumb, all in the best ways possible. Because I think, you know, I wasn't expecting anything. I know it was being it was definitely being marketed as a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that I had read about it or had heard about it was that it was really funny and it's not supposed to be taken seriously. So I went in expecting to have fun. And I know Sam Raimi, like you said in your first thoughts, like in Spider-Man, he really toned his style down and it worked really, really well. It's still in there, but it, for some reason, just Spider-Man's kind of goofy anyway. So it just like worked. Right. Yeah. And it just like fit really well for that iteration of Spider-Man. Then he had Spider-Man 3 and that was just like, dude, you went way too far. that was the worst.
Yeah.
But he has the, I did not like Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I thought that was also just kind of too dumb. But this one, I just thought like, okay, he's going to really go for it and he's going to be kind of crazy. It's going to be ridiculous and it's going to be stupid, but he knows it's going to be that. So that's what I expected and that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
The thing that I did like about it, and I came to like this more and appreciate it more after the fact, is, and you talked about this again, it was kind of all over the place in tone. And it would go from, and especially with the characters, you would go from like, oh, I really like this character to then like, I don't know about this character. Like, I don't know if I like them very much. And then like, oh, I kind of hate this character. And then, oh, I like this character again. Like it was kind of all over the place that way. But in reading what Sam Raimi and the writers wanted, like that's exactly what they wanted.
Right.
They didn't want anything to be straightforward and they didn't want to have the turn of Dylan O'Brien being the bad guy, then to the good guy and Rachel McAdams being the good guy to being the bad guy. Because it shows that, and that's what it's telling you in the trailer.
Right.
But, and spoilers from here on out, at least, we're at least going to mention them. But that's not the case. And the entire movie, you're back and forth with like, and when I read that, I was like, that's exactly how I felt. So that's what they're trying to do. And they accomplished it, at least with me. Like, and I was like, yeah, the moral ambiguity of the whole movie is very interesting.
Yeah.
Like it really intrigued me.
Yeah.
Because I don't like Linda.
Yeah.
But I don't like Dylan O'Brien's character either. Like, yeah. And I guess she's the lesser of the two evils, but she's also like, she's a murderer. Like, she murders, straight up murders people.
Well, that's the, I mean, so like, again, you know, to commend Rachel McAdams, first of all, like, there's always this thing in Hollywood where it's like, can we make a person who is kind of universally regarded as like conventionally attractive?
Yes.
Can we make them unattractive? Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns. Yeah. Oh, she's got her hair all messed up and glasses on. Look what a mess she is. But when she falls out the window and gets cats licking her, all the, it's like, now she's hot. It's like, she was hot before. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
What are you talking, you know, or like, you know, she's all that. It's like, she's got paint on her overalls.
Yeah.
She could never be the prom queen.
Isn't that in Not Another Teen Movie or whatever?
Probably,
like,
yeah.
They're like, what about her? It's like, she's like got a hunchback. Oh, Quasimodo, that's too easy.
Yeah.
Oh, what about that girl? No, she's got paint on her skirt. She's like a messy hair. And yeah.
Yeah, it's like Rachel Lee Cook is like so hot, like, in that movie.
Super, yeah, like very good looking. Yeah.
Doesn't make just any like sense. Impossible. No one could make Lainey Boggs the prom queen. Are you kidding me? Lainey Boggs? She has glasses and a ponytail and overalls. Impossible.
Yes. No.
I think that Rachel McAdams does a nice job here. It's not just the way that they style her with the clothes that she wears and her hairstyle, but I think Rachel McAdams does a nice job of making the character of Linda off-putting.
Yes.
And just kind of socially uncomfortable and not, she just doesn't have very strong social skills. And
totally,
she's just the kind of person who, like, in real life, you're like, yeah, people like that tend to like have a hard time making friends.
Yeah. And the I've known people like her, the way that she played her character and her mannerisms, and like, you know, she puts on these shoes and she thinks she's funny, but she's not funny. And then like the fact she's eating the tuna salad and it's like on her face. And
that was disgusting.
It was like, it was gross. They did a good job with that, but she did a great job of like the personality traits of that character were off-putting.
Yeah. By the way, everybody, spoilers here on the podcast. If you want a spoiler-free conversation, go listen to our first thoughts on the podcast. It's always spoilers. So if you haven't seen Send Help, we're about to spoil everything in the movie. I have no doubt that what Sam Raimi and his writers and what they were shooting for, they did. That they that they made the movie they set out to make.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, I think that my ultimate thing is that I'm just like, I think it just isn't for me.
Yeah.
I think that the Sam Raimi thing of like being all over the place, being kind of scattershot with the tone for me is just sort of it, like, and I'm all right with a movie that keeps you guessing, a movie that keeps you feeling like, geez, it's at one point I felt like maybe it was this way. And then, you know, and going back and forth the entire time. But this is a movie where I'm like, I genuinely don't know what movie I'm watching. Like, I don't know if I'm watching like a rom-com where it's going to be like unexpectedly Linda and her boss fall in love because he finds out like she's actually cooler than he thought she was. And she's really resourceful and smart. And honestly, when she just is wearing like a tank top on the beach, she's actually like pretty good looking. At points it felt like that. It felt like, I talked about, you know, the tone of the film 6 days, seven nights with.
Yeah. Yeah. Harrison Ford. Thought of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like at points it felt like that, but from the trailers, what I thought I was going to sit down to watch was Misery on a deserted island.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is hobbled. His leg is broken. He can't move. He's completely reliant on her to stay alive, but she's kind of not all there and she's kind of scary. Yeah. And that's the movie I thought I was going to watch. And I'm a big proponent of like, don't judge a movie for not being what you thought it was going to be.
Right. Right.
Allow the movie to subvert your expectations, allow the movie to be what the filmmakers want it to be. So really quickly, early on in the film, I was like, I think I was wrong about the tone of this movie. That's fine. Let me try to recalibrate and adjust to what the audience all seems to be enjoying, because everyone was laughing and having a good time. And I was like, that's right. It's Sam Raimi. He does horror comedy. Mm-hmm. I've seen Drag Me to Hell. I've seen Evil Dead and Army of Darkness. Like, I know. Okay. But then, like, even when I was trying to calibrate for the comedy, I wasn't laughing like when everyone else was laughing. And I was still just on the ride of them trying to constantly get me, keep me guessing of who is the bad guy here. Mm-hmm. And I constantly kept losing track of, like, what's the movie about? Like, what kind of movie is this? And it just sort of felt like the movie was just shifting tones because that's what Sam Raimi does. And I think the stuff that started rubbing me the wrong way was like, so, okay, we talked about this with Running Man, where, Edgar Wright would have these things in the edit where it would be like, an Edgar Wright movie does transitions like this. So it's going to happen this way so that you're reminded that Edgar Wright's directing this movie, but it's not necessarily because the movie, like, stylistically is asking for that touch of flair. And that would happen in this movie. Like, when she goes out and hunts this boar, it was such a, like, Sam Raimi scene where the boar was like a deadite from Evil Dead. It wasn't like a normal wild boar. It was like, and like, it was like this thing that had, like, more sentience to it than a normal wild animal would be. And then they just made her killing the boar extra graphic for no reason other than, like, this is what, like, they needed to find a way to inject some blood splatter into the film. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, stuff like that took me out of it. It just felt Sam Raimi being like, let's throw some Sam Raimi, like, funny, you know, like, too gory of blood splatter stuff. Or, like, you know, walking in, like, into a cave and we go through a spider web where there's, like, a creepy crawly spider. This stuff that to me just kind of goes like, it doesn't actually add atmosphere to the film. It makes the film feel like artifice to me, and makes me feel like the filmmaker is looking at me going like, it's me, Sam Raimi. And I'm like, yeah, buddy, I got it. Like, I'm just like, what is your movie about? And what am, you know, but I also am like, I know I'm on the outs here. And I know that, like, those are the touch. It's kind of like, there are some people who have been along for the ride with Tim Burton the whole way, and they never got off the train. And they're like, I'm just here for him to do Tim Burton stuff and to wink at me and be like, whether the movies are still good or not. And I'm like, well, it just, those stylistic touches to me worked better in Edward Scissorhands. They seemed to belong to that world more. And they seemed to, you know, but I don't know.
I think you have a really, really good point, because if you're not for that, that if you don't want it to be that Sam Raimi style, then it's not going to work. I was expecting that. And when she was going after the boar, I wanted it to be extra and I wanted it to be kind of crazy and over the top. Most of the movie I wanted to be over the top because it was Sam Raimi doing it. So I was there for the ride, and that is what I wanted. I wasn't expecting this to be a good movie, and it still wasn't. Like, it's not trying to be. Like, it's trying to be a ride. It's trying to be what Sam Raimi does. And but you're totally right. If you don't want that, and if you don't like that, then it's not going to work.
I think he
was going for it.
I think that's it. Is like. What Sam Raimi does well that people really like is he intentionally makes kind of bad movies.
Yes. It's like just above a B movie.
Yeah.
It's like a B movie with A actors and like,
yeah. And people really like that. They like that. Like the, you know, again, like the sandwich on the mouth and the zooming in on it. And the, and then like later the conversation in the boardroom with the other guy, and they're zooming in on that guy and they're zooming in on his nose, smelling the noxious odor of her sandwich and stuff. And Raimi does these really over the top visual things to sort of turn the dial up on the campiness of the film. And I think what I realized after Send Help is that, if I'm being completely honest with myself, I've never really cared for that. Like, I've never really cared for like, I don't really care about the Evil Dead series. And I'm just sort of like, I don't really care for this series. That's like, no, it's supposed to be bad. I'm like, I'd rather watch something good. Like, I think I'd just rather watch something that's like made well instead of a director who's like, no, I'm trying to do a make it bad. I'm like, all right. I'd rather watch someone who's trying to make it good and who, you know,
it's,
but I get it. I get that. Like, there's a clearly a space for that. And I am in the minority, clearly.
Well, and it's funny, 'cause I usually don't like that either. Like the Sharknado movies, I just can't. I just can't.
Yeah.
But Sam Raimi is at least a good enough filmmaker that when he does it, it's still a level above those type of movies, those type of sci-fi movies or asylum movies. You know, like I can't watch those. But for Sam Raimi, because this does have a lot of good, it has a lot of good moments in it that are really good filmmaking tools. Like when they have this scene by the fire, and we find out that Rachel McAdams, her husband was abusive and he was, you know, not good. She stayed together with him for like 10 years and he would always get drunk and she would hide the keys. But on the night that he died, she put his keys on the table and he drove drunk and he got killed in a car accident. And then we find out that Dylan O'Brien is, his parents were never there for him. His mom was abusive. He didn't even know his dad. So he's kind of the product of his home. Right. And that scene itself is actually done really, really well. And that's like the characterization that you don't get in those intentionally bad movies.
Yeah.
And there's a few other scenes in here that are like, okay, he's got enough in there that's what I appreciate. Like there's enough good filmmaking in there that I can latch onto, and I'm fine with it being bad. But there's definitely some of his that I just can't, like, I haven't seen Evil Dead. But there's some of those that I'm like, it just doesn't work for me. So I get where you're coming from. For some reason, this one worked for me because I think my expectations were perfectly in line with what the movie was. And that really helped me. So,
well, so like Drag Me to Hell is another Sam Raimi over the top, you know, comedy horror. But there's like these overt scenes of like gross out stuff. The movie's about a curse that gets put on the main character for like she
denies her bank loan or something.
Yeah, she makes this like old gypsy woman mad, and then the woman like puts a curse on her. Yeah. But because of the curse, there's these scenes that are really over the top, like where she'll like someone will like puke on her, but it'll be like a hose of throw up.
Yeah.
And it's really over the but it fits with the narrative of the film because it's like, yeah, she's got a curse put on. It's supernatural. And in this movie, it's like what's happening to them feels like the world that they inhabit feels like the real world. Yeah. And then it feels like Sam Raimi and the writers are like, where are we going to get our over the top gross out stuff from?
Right.
And so they're like, she has to kill a boar, and like the boar, like the blood, like sprays all over her. And it's like, okay. But it just feels like they're like, where are we going to get our stuff from? Like, because like Evil Dead, it's like, it's these undead zombie things that will like, you know, throw up blood on you and the gore is baked into the story and the world of the film. Whereas here it was just like, I was kind of like surprised that we never got to see Dylan O'Brien's broken leg. Like I was like, hey, that's a thing. If you want to do some like gross out body horror stuff, like give us a look at like his leg there. Like maybe he's got like a compound fracture and like his tibia is sticking through the skin or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you only see a little thing, but I thought that too. You know, they could have actually broken it where she had to amputate it or something, you know. But anyway, go on.
No, exactly right though. That's what I'm saying is like it feels like they were like they wrote themselves into a corner of like, well, we're stuck on this island. So where are we going to get the like elements of blood and guts and gore from? And there just weren't a lot of places to go with it. And so it's like, well, maybe there's like a wild boar attack and she has to, you know, and it's like, but I just feel like they were reaching. Yeah. And again, and that's when I just go like, maybe the movie just doesn't need to have that. Like, yeah. If you just grant, if you just work within the parameters of the world that you're in, like, it's enough for me in Castaway, which is obviously a completely different film with a completely different tone. Yeah. But like him cutting his hand while he's trying to make a fire and then having to like wash it out in the seawater is something that like makes my skin crawl. And him having to knock his own tooth out with a
with an ice skate.
And it's like, I know that that's a completely different story that Zemeckis is telling there, but he's working with like the world of the story, and Sam Raimi wants to make a movie that has all of the over-the-top gross-out horror of Drag Me to Hell and Evil Dead, but he's stuck on an island and he's like, well, where are we gonna get it? I don't know.
You're actually absolutely right, because originally this movie was going to be a lot more psychological thriller than it was going to be this horror comedy hybrid. Mm-hmm. And because Raimi wanted to do it that way. So you're totally right. And they're actually, throughout the entire movie, I did think like, there's a really, really good straight thriller here, or like horror thriller. That like the story is set up really well. You know, mean boss has to survive with person he hates who's really nice. Like, there's a really good psychological thriller horror in here, but it wasn't that, you know. And it did get injected with the Sam Raimi-isms of it all. And so that, I mean, I can't, I like you said, like I gave into it, but if you don't like it, then it makes sense.
I think ultimately that's the issue that I'm having. And again, it's like, I hate to judge a movie based on like what it isn't versus what it is, but I am sitting there going like, there's a really solid psychological horror that you've got here with this premise that could be really well executed, and it doesn't need all the other stuff. But Sam Raimi's coming in and it's almost like he gets this screenplay and goes like, can we inject it with a bunch of Sam Raimi stuff? Because it's me. And I just go like, well, does this story need those things? Or are you just doing them so that the audience knows they're watching? And again, the audience that I watched the movie with, and according to they're liking what he did. So I know I'm wrong here, but,
Well, you're not wrong. It's just, you know, if you don't like the style, then it makes sense why you don't like the style. And I totally get it.
And again, it's like, I think I get it more with Drag Me to Hell or Evil Dead or Army of Dark. Like, the style makes more sense to me.
It does.
In those films, even if I still don't go like, those are some of the best films ever made. I don't think they're supposed to be some of the best films ever made, but like it makes more sense to me. And here it was just sort of like, you're just doing that because the audience, you assume the audience has an expectation that you'll do that. And again, he did not assume incorrectly. Like, the audience seems to be like, no, that's what we want to see. We definitely want to like as much of that stuff as you can give us, you know, like the little zombie sequence when the dead fiance shows up. It's like as much as that.
Dumb.
Yeah, but it's like, as much of that as you can give us, we want that. Yeah. Like, that's what people
are... Well, and you know, when that scene came up, I was like, okay, this is a dream sequence, like, obviously. And it's going to be scary, and it's going to do a super stupid thing. And that was exactly what it was. And she like, grabs her head, and then she looks at the camera, which I was like, that's super stupid. Like, and it, like, zooms in on the zombie face, and...
Yeah, and I feel like there's a movie that takes itself a little more seriously.
Oh yeah,
in here that like, done right, you know, given to a director like Steven Soderbergh or someone that's like really taught and keeps, because I just found myself anytime there was something in the movie that could potentially introduce some tension and some, I felt like the tone would then undercut it with like something goofy and silly and everyone in the audience would be laughing. And I'd be like, well, so what are we watching here? Like, am I meant to care about the stakes here?
Yeah.
And And there are genuinely things in the plot that I was like, what does Linda want? Because we do know this. Linda is a survivalist enthusiast.
Yes.
We see early on in the film that her apartment is littered with books about survivalism, mm-hmm. and that she's a huge fan of the TV show Survivor.
Right.
So when Linda and her boss are in a plane crash and shipwrecked mm-hmm. And marooned on a desert island, mm-hmm. initially she's like so excited to be there. Like, it's the exact opposite reaction that anyone else would have about being on a desert island, but this is like all of Linda's dreams come true. And immediately she's like great at it. It's not Tom Hanks in Castaway where it takes him a while to figure it out. She's on top of it immediately, and she's been like preparing for this situation. And you know, we find out that her role at the company is strategy and planning, mm-hmm. and this is, so we're getting a glimpse into the fact that she's a person who knows how to put together a plan, and she's highly competent and a lot smarter than her peers give her credit for.
Yes.
And we're getting, you know, but like then at some point in like the mid second act of the film, she's out foraging and she sees a boat that's very close to the beach. That seems, it's like a boat that's looking for survivors from this plane crash. Yeah. And she says to herself, not yet.
Yeah.
And because there's this power dynamic that she's now got power over her boss, Dylan O'Brien. Mm-hmm. But in my brain, it's like, what is she hoping to accomplish in her time here on the island with her boss? And is it that she wants to, she's like, I'm not going to leave this island until he agrees to give me the promotion that I was denied? Because earlier in the film, he gives her job away to somebody else.
Yeah.
Is that her goal? Or is it, I'm not leaving here till he gives me his job? Or is it like, she's kind of in love with him and she wants to, it's an Annie Wilkes thing from Misery that she wants. I was just very confused as to like, what is her motivation to stay here?
Right.
And, or is it just that like, she really likes the survivor thing. She really likes playing Hana does. And I couldn't tell even by the end of the film, like why she was so against being rescued.
Yeah. I think, how I read it, because I think it's left up to interpretation.
Yeah.
How I read it was that she was like, she found her home. Like, she was in love with everything that she was doing. And like, you can tell they do it on purpose. Like she's really, you know, she's really not that attractive in the beginning, but then as she's on this island, she lets her hair down and she becomes more attractive, which is, you know, like, she's found her place.
She's
this
in
is
her
where
element.
She's thriving. Yeah. And I,
how Linda got her groove back.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So she is becoming that. And she's like, I can't, you know, give this up yet. But I also think it was the power dynamics. Like she's like, also this guy is depending on me and I have power over him and I kind of like it. And I think that was how I interpreted it. It is not given in any way, though. And the thing that undercuts it for me, which is the thing that I bump on the most, is the ending. Because we find out later that boat is going to a house that a billionaire owns that is on the island.
And that Linda's not actually been.
Yes.
She's been getting a lot of her supplies from this house. And I felt like this undercut her character's intelligence and her, you know.
Well, and that's what makes me think of it as like, okay, so it's more the power dynamics of it.
Yeah.
Like she can have power over this guy. And maybe at first it was, you know, I'm not gonna save us until I have my job back, but then it kind of became like, well, now I have a taste of power and I really, really like it. And she uses it very, very well.
Yeah. In the straightforward psychological thriller version of this movie. And I think I'm just going to commit to like being like, well, I'm going to talk about the movie I wish I had seen.
Yeah, that's fine.
In the straightforward psychological thriller of this movie, I think Dylan O'Brien's leg is worse than
yeah.
And it stays bad. And he is like, he's, it's like if he wants to get away from her, he's going to have to like walk on a broken tibia or something, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like it's like grotesquely bad. And he, you know, very similar to you know, James Caan in Misery. Like he's he's stuck. Mm-hmm. And also, I think if we're gonna do the twist that Linda's actually not the survivalist she's been pretending to be, that she's been getting a lot of fruit and like fresh food and stuff, and she's probably been taking showers and stuff at this really fancy billionaire house on the other side of the island. If we're going with that, if that angle, I want to see that twist introduced earlier in the film.
Yeah.
I want to see like the revelation that she's been withholding this shelter from him and the you know, earlier. And then when he finds that out, her to be like, no, well now I have to like tie you up in the house. Yeah. And you know, like, and like, I felt like finding that out as we're entering the like home stretch of the movie and that being like the final action set piece. Yeah. It was like, this is, because I don't necessarily mind that as a twist. I thought that was kind of a fun thing, because it also is like, oh, cool. That means that like there are elements to Linda's deceit that go even deeper than what we, the audience, knew.
Yeah.
And that even the movie trying to trick us into thinking that Linda's this like really, you know, but it's still, but also I'm like, I don't really like the way that it kind of, it takes away from her resourcefulness and her
That was why I didn't love that ending, because of what you said, takes away. But then again, like thinking back on it, it does reframe the power dynamics of it, so but it makes her less likable, right? Yeah. And like, and that's fine. There's nobody to like in this movie. Like, honestly, they're both bad.
Yeah.
In their own ways. But yeah, I kind of wish there was no house. But I don't know how to end the movie in a different way. Like, it would almost be good if they were both back on the, if they both got saved, but she, I don't know. I, even saying it, like, if she had some sort of power over him somehow, that would be interesting. Yeah,
to me, if it's about the power dynamic, if that's what it's, if that's the reason why she doesn't want to be rescued yet and she wants to stay there, I also think that like there's got to be a goal there of like,
right,
obviously she knows we can't just live forever, and she does say that at one point. She's like, maybe we just stay here, you know, maybe.
Yeah
but like I think that there's got to be something where, like, you know, early on when he says like, you're fired, you're like, you're so fired, you're so that, like, there are a few scenes I really like the scene when she paralyzes him.
Oh, that was amazing. I was going to talk about that. Yeah.
Really liked that scene. That was some good tension. But again, every time that there was like something like that, I felt like we undercut it and let all the air out and let all the, you know, and I don't mind that she's faking, that she's pretending to neuter him.
Yes.
You know, but I just feel like that scene was one of the more, it's sort of like the Annie Wilkes hobbling Paul scene.
It
like
is.
It's the scene where she really shows what she's capable of. Mm-hmm. But I would have preferred a movie where she's like, before we leave here, I am going to convince you that I am the smartest, most capable person working at your company. Mm-hmm. And like, you are going to acknowledge that, because the thing about it is like at the beginning of this film, Dylan O'Brien's dad, who was the CEO of this company, dies and bequeaths the company to Dylan. He becomes the new CEO.
Yeah.
He's the successor to his father. His father had promised Linda a promotion to VP of the company because his father recognized the value she brings to the company. And even though Linda's not she's not one of the guys, and she doesn't golf, and she's not very personable, and she's not very social, her father, or Dylan O'Brien's father, knew that she was probably the smartest person working at his company and the most valuable person working at his company. Dylan O'Brien doesn't understand her value. So to me, the movie needs to be about her convincing him of her value. Right. And even if I think it's more like messed up if by the end of the movie, he just like agrees and she has trained him to they get rescued and he's like, she's actually going to be the new CEO of the, you know, like, that he like actually is converted into like Linda's like,
that's, I think that would have been the better ending.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of I was getting at. Yeah. If she has some sort of power over him to do that, I think I would have liked it more. Even still, how it does end, it was fine for me. But I think that ending is the one that I think would be more satisfying for the characters. But again, they're also just kind of there's horrible people. So
that's the place we never get to with Misery. It's just like, oh no, right. Annie Wilkes she's crazy, and he's got to get out of there. But yeah. I think the idea of starting off with, oh, Linda's kind of crazy, and then Linda doing increasingly more and more things to him to be like, hey man. Mm-hmm. We're not in your office anymore and you can't talk to me like that. And like doing like paralyzing him and being like, I'm in control of you.
Yeah.
I know how everything works on this, but like, I think as a twist to get to the end of the movie and action, because the screenplay almost feels like it's flirting with this idea of him being converted into like being like, and that's those scenes you were talking about, the fireplace scene where they're opening up to each other and they're, you know, and she's teaching him things. She's teaching him how to be a survivalist and how to build and And I thought, like, even despite her cruelty to him and the violence, if she could like make him a believer in her value, that and it's like, and also a commentary on like the cutthroat nature of corporate business, the business world, of being like, you need to be kind of a killer. You need to have that killer instinct. You need to be ruthless and hardcore to like run a Fortune 500 company. Yeah. And for him to see that, to see that, like, actually, you know what? You've got so much more than I thought you had.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And if it's some sort of Stockholm syndrome thing, right? Where he does become dependent on her and he like, she manipulates him into that. I think that would be a much, even with the movie that we have, the movie that you're talking about would also be great. But even with the movie that we have, the ending I am still unsatisfied with. And I think if they would have done something like that, because I was like, oh, I hope that they, you know, that might happen, but it doesn't. So I think that would have been a better ending.
I think the issue with the movie as it is that Dylan O'Brien's character doesn't actually change ever. He just pretends to change.
Yeah,
he just lies.
Yeah.
He just tries to, he just keeps trying to trick her into thinking that he's changed.
Yes.
And he never actually has.
No.
And I think it's more interesting if he does.
I agree. Yeah. And that's what I thought too, and that's why I still like the movie, because that's what they were going for. Like, he does have some good in him, but he never changes. So I kind of was hoping that he would change, and that, just like we talked about, Linda could manipulate him into doing whatever she wanted. But that's not really what we get. I mean, the what happens is they start, she sees the boat, they start kind of like thriving in this area. At least they have shelter, they have the food that they need, and then Dylan O'Brien poisons her. He poisons Rachel McAdams, and he has been secretly making a raft.
Which also, I was like, when were you building the raft, dude? When
I think they showed a scene in the middle where he's doing something and like hides it and then goes. So I was like, okay, I got it. But he built a raft. It basically works out exactly like it does in Castaway.
Yeah.
Where it's not big enough, it's not good enough. He comes back in.
You need a porta potty sail, dude.
Yeah, you do. Okay. You need a sail,
you idiot.
Come on, man. And she throws up all over him, which I was like, that's not that there's no need for this. Like,
this is another Sam Raimi thing of being totally. Like, let's have her throw up 15 times on his face, from which at least here I'm like, I like it that it's like, I gave you poison berries, got rocked by the ocean.
Yeah.
And now my punishment is, while you're doing CPR on me, you're going to throw up the poison berries all over my face. And I'm like, okay, at least like cause and effect there. But it's still like Sam Raimi looking for any opportunity to be like, my whole thing is bodily fluids being thrown around on, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was like, all right, whatever. But she pulls him back into shore and he's like apologizing. He feels so bad. And she gives him this thing to eat and it's a squid and he eats it. And then he goes, she's like, you're paralyzed. And she's like, you know, this is actually a pretty easy procedure. She's talking about castrating him. Mm-hmm. And so he is totally paralyzed, which Dylan O'Brien did an amazing job in this scene.
Yeah.
And Rachel McAdams does a great job in this scene too, because she starts cutting and he thinks that she is neutering him. And there's blood that splatters all over him, and he's like, he can't move, but he's crying. And then she reveals that it's a rat. And yeah. she's, and the thing that was so great is like, she's like, if you ever do this, there won't be a rat again.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and it was like, she means business, which I thought was awesome. That
did
was
you ever
really
see the movie Hard Candy?
No, I did not, but I know it. It's with what's
Elliot Page and Patrick Wilson.
Patrick Wilson, yeah.
But that has a scene that's very similar where there's like a simulated castration that doesn't wind up being the real thing.
I've read about that. But great scene, really great. But then at that point, he is definitely more submissive to her, but their relationship is kind of gone at that point.
Yeah, see, I think it's more disturbing if they wind up getting rescued, but he's like, no, Linda needs to be in charge.
Right. You know? Yeah, I agree.
Like, I think that's just like a more interesting result
than
what winds up happening, which is his fiance somehow, against all odds, like finds their island and finds Linda and is like, Linda, oh my gosh. Like, and then Linda is taking the fiance and this captain of the boat that she was on, completely innocent people back to their camp. And she, you know, which also I was like, the way that this is set up is she and Dylan O'Brien are on a hike earlier in the film and she stands on a piece of land that gives way and she falls and he helps her back up.
Yeah.
But then she's like, oh, I'll have her stand on the same place. But in my brain, I'm like, but the loose ground already broke. Like like it doesn't like replace. It's not like a video game map. Like in my brain, it's like if there was loose ground that you were standing on that broke away, it's already done. Like I don't know. I just was like, it already happened. But whatever. Yeah. She like tricks the fiance into standing on the loose ground, and I guess there's more of it.
Yeah.
And you know, I also thought it was weird that we cut away from this. That like,
it was kind of.
We went back to it and see it, but I was like, what? Like,
I know. I wondered that too. It was very obvious.
Yeah, I was just kind of like, do you think that like that we're thinking there's any possibility that those people are alive? You know.
Yeah. Well, and then she has her dream before we see what happens, which was weird too. She has a dream about the fiance coming. That's a zombie, and it's anyway. Yeah.
Very. Yeah, and anyway, she lets these people die. And she actually drops a rock on them.
She murders them.
She murders them.
Yeah.
And Dylan O'Brien winds up finding the hand of his. Yeah, which is just like, you know, it's a big island, but, you know. But I did like the way that they set up this house twist that it's like, as soon as she has that knife and he's like, where'd you get that knife? And she goes, oh, it washed up on shore. You're like, so there's something. And early in the film, she's pointed out an area of the island that she's like, never go over there. And you know, immediately, like, there's something over there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And my immediate thought was like, maybe it's a town. Like, maybe there's like a little, like, I literally was like, maybe they're on like a little resort, you know,
I just
there's like a hotel over there.
And, yeah. I thought that would be the spot for the climax, which it ultimately was, but you know that like there's something going to happen there.
But Dylan O'Brien, basically throughout this film, anytime it looks like they're like getting chummy with each other or starting to understand each other or working together more, it just seems like he's always just playing the angle of like, I've got to placate crazy Linda so that she lets her guard down enough that I can like escape or poison her. And then when he figures out that like his fiance was there and he died, it's like, it's all out war. It's time to fight to the death. And they do have this really gnarly fight in the jungle, which I thought I thought this was fun.
Yeah.
You know,
he like sticks his thumb in her eye.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
And this is a good spot for like some like fun Sam Raimi,
right,
ooey gooey violence, you know? But again, it just was like, I'm not sure that the setting of this film lends itself to what Sam Raimi wants to do with all the body horror. And you know, so it felt like the movie was constantly like, we need to find more opportunities to unleash the beast with the gore. But this fight was kind of fun. And it's just sort of a sprint to the end where he winds up finding this house that's on the side of the island where she said never to go to. And we find out that for a lot of the film, she's been getting a lot of the fruit and supplies and food and stuff from this house. I, but I, like, there's other stuff. Like when he, like the night when they got drunk together, I was just like, why did he not take the knife? Like there's so many times where she would be like asleep with her knife and I'd be like, why doesn't he just
he does take the knife.
Does he at one point?
Yeah, he does. Like when she
it's after though, after he takes the knife after he finds his fiance's hand. He takes the knife later.
Yeah, it is. It's I can't remember, but he did. But yeah, it is kind of it's in a weird spot, but yeah.
Anyway, they have a big final confrontation in this house, and she winds up killing him with a golf club, which is, you know, funny because his whole thing, the reason why he didn't give her the promotion, one of the reasons is he was like, you got to play golf. Like, you don't
play golf.
And we do a nice, like, transition as she's like hitting him in the head with a golf club to her playing golf as the CEO of this company.
Yeah.
But it's also like the end of the movie is just like, did nobody ask? I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 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 You got to make a jump, but she's obviously resourceful enough to just like toss his body in the ocean.
Yeah.
And
erase the security footage from this house.
No one would clean everything up. And you know, and then the two people that tried to look for him, they just died at sea. You never know. Right. Like, so I believed that she could get off scot-free. They just don't explain it in the movie at all. It's kind of like whatever.
And I do think it's right that Linda wins. Like I think it is.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether she wins because she convinces Dylan O'Brien to give her the position, or she wins because she kills him and she kills everybody and she takes over the company. Right, I think it's right that Linda wins. That's the way this movie should end.
Yes.
But you know, I think it's more messed up if she like convinces him that she's better suited for the job than he is.
I think that would be interesting too. Cause once he sees the house, I was like, what? Like I wasn't fully on board with that.
Yeah.
But even though everything else I liked, and it ultimately did end pretty well, because the thing that we kind of skipped over is like, Dylan O'Brien is like, he's again trying to lie to her and say like, I love you, you know, like it can just be you and I here. And she's pretending like it's, you know, that's what she's wanted the whole time, because she has a shotgun to his face.
Yeah.
And then he steals the shotgun and it turns out it's not loaded again. Yeah. Just almost like she's playing with him, because she's from strategy and planning, like, it's not loaded because I knew this was going to happen, kind of like makes her devious. So it works enough for me, but it is, I think the psychological aspect of it, of him being submissive to her in the end, would have been a better ending.
Again, I think if you're a Sam Raimi fan, if you like what he likes to do, he's doing his thing and people are having a good time. And you probably were shaking your head at a lot of what I was saying through this episode, but
it is a fun ride. I had a ton of fun with it, but go in with the expectations. Yep. If you're more like Austin, and you don't like those Sam Raimi things, you're not going to like it. But if you know that it's going to be kind of crazy, kind of stupid, kind of dumb, but still a lot of fun, you'll have fun.
Yeah. Let's get into our scores. We grade the movies, score movies, out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a score for the technical craft of the film, a score for the ending of the film, a score for rewatchability, a score for cultural impact significance, and a subjective score, just our subjective feeling about the movie. So Kramer, what is your technical score for Send Help?
My technical score is a 6.5. I think the cinematography was actually really good. I thought they shot it really well. Some of the action sequences, like that fight at the end, was choreographed well, and it was fun. And
the plane crash scene is pretty fun.
We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah. The guy getting
like his teeth and like,
that's pretty fun. Yeah.
And he's like on the outside of the plane. He's like, Linda. And she just closes the window.
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. That was, but the VFX actually looked pretty good. The boar, even though you could tell it was fake, it actually seemed to work. So, and I think the screenwriting did a really good job of doing what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I think where I'm taking it off, though, is that the ending wasn't as satisfying. And then it is kind of over the top, but I guess in a good way. So that's not taking away, but still a lot of good filmmaking things in there.
Yeah, I gave it a 5. And maybe this is me letting my subjective thoughts bleed too much into my grading of the technical craft. But for me, it's like mostly what I'm giving technical points here for is Rachel McAdams' performance.
Yes.
And I think Dylan O'Brien is doing what he can with a character who I don't think is like, I just don't think there's a whole lot there depth wise.
Yeah.
And I wish there were more levels to that. But I feel like all of the tonal stuff, the tonal shifts and the tonal meshing to throw the audience off of what kind of movie are we watching or what are the motivations of these characters, just for me and my personal taste, was to the movie's detriment, where it just was like, I think that there's too much going on here that's at war with itself, and the movie is not, I think there's a better movie that like wants to be made from this screenplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think Sam Raimi was kind of like, in my opinion, was his own worst enemy here. How about the ending?
The ending I gave a 5. It was out of left field. Mm-hmm. But it still worked for me. So like, it wasn't bad, but it worked well enough. And I think it felt good enough. So,
yeah, I gave it a 5 as well. It's an ending that I'm like, that's right, she should be the winner at the end.
Right.
I do like, I think it's like a nice, it's a twist that I'm like, if we're going to do that, I want something else with it. I don't want it to just be like, oh, she had a house. That's how she was doing everything. And she's like, she's not actually that smart. It's like, yeah. I'm just kind of like, oh, I wish there was something else with that.
Right.
How about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I gave a 7. I think I had fun with it, mm-hmm. and I could rewatch it and kind of pick up on maybe some of the pieces that were there before, but I had a lot of fun, so.
I didn't know what to say here because my subjective rewatchability is like low.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then I was like, well, okay, I got to save that for my subjective score. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this is a mixture of my subjective feeling and what I think the audience will feel. So I gave it a 5 because I'm like, I think the general audiences are going to be more where you're at with like a 7 or an 8 on rewatchability. Mm-hmm. This is going to go into their canon of Sam Raimi films that they like mm-hmm. to rewatch and enjoy. And for me, it's like, sure, if somebody wants to watch Send Help, I'll watch it. Fine.
Yeah.
How about cultural impact and relevance and significance?
Yes. Cultural impact, I gave a 6.5. I mean, it's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And people are really liking it. And I mm-hmm. think it will go down as one of the better Sam Raimi films for the people who like Sam Raimi. Or at least it's going to be in there right with everything else. You know.
Yeah.
It probably won't be better than Evil Dead, but it'll be up there.
So. Yeah. I gave it a 6. I think that people are going to, I think this is doing better for Sam Raimi than Doctor Strange did.
Yes.
And I don't know that it's going to like revitalize his career in any like in major way. I think he's probably like seen the best days of his career come and go, which just happens with Phil, you know, but like, mm-hmm. but like the Sam Raimi heads are like getting what they paid for. They're getting what they wanted.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
And how about your subjective score?
My subjective score is a 7. I had a ton of fun. I thought it was funny. I thought it was crazy. I thought it was, you know, didn't take itself seriously. So it gave me what I was expecting and what I wanted. So I enjoyed it.
I gave it a 3.5. I just was like, I was really trying to recalibrate the whole time. I was like, recalibrate, lock back into like what this is. But then it was like all the Sam Raimi stuff. I just kept kind of going like, I just don't think that this movie needs that. I just think that there's like a better movie that I wanted to pull out of the bones of this thing.
I would love to see the opposite of this, where it is a psychological horror, right?
Like, yeah.
I still would love to see that movie, but.
Mm-hmm.
But well, I mean, maybe down the line, who knows?
Yeah. How much did you disagree with me and why? Let us know in the comments and like, share, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. We're going back in time again. A lot of people on the internet have been talking about the classic Lord of the Rings trilogy by Peter Jackson from the beginning of this mm-hmm. century. Those films are 25 years old, and they just did a re-release in theaters recently. And a lot of film channels have been talking about them. So next week, we're going to be talking about The Fellowship of the Ring. And kind of throughout this year, 2026, whenever we have like a down week where there's not like a huge release in theaters, we'll go to the next one. So over the course of the year, we'll try to cover all three. But next week, we're going to start out with The Fellowship of the Ring and talk just about the crazy story of how these movies got made and how they don't make movies. I mean, it is like the epitome of like, they don't make them like this anymore, and they didn't even really make them like this back when this was made. They almost never make them like this. And you know, the crazy success story of these films and the unlikely success story of these films. And we'll start out with The Fellowship next week. So if you want to watch along with the show, that's what we're watching. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody, tell your coworkers to watch and subscribe to the Wonder Podcast, and we will see you next week.